Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Wow, I just got my bonus.
Yeah, you did. With JCPenney bonus bucks.
It's basically a holiday.
Close. It's Black Friday in July.
Now what can my bonus buy me?
Almost anything. Combine your JCPenney bonus bucks with 60% off JCPenney exclusive brands.
Hurry in Thursday through Sunday to shop Black Friday in July. Plus, earn while you shop. Spend $50, earn $10 in JCPenney bonus bucks. Earn today, spend today. JCPenney, style and value for all. Conditions and exclusions apply. See store jcp.com/bonusbucks for details.
It's Mark and Kitchen.
Impressive bounce back win and much needed win for the Cavaliers.
I have a huge responsibility for this team.
Boston never really in this one.
You know, I have to score, I have to rebound, I have to defend.
Backdoor James throws it down.
And I also have to inspire my teammates to, you know, be better.
And this Eastern Conference final is now 2-1 in favor of the Celtics.
And I'm okay with that.
On Sports Radio 103.7 WEEI.
And he gets around it.
Sorry, the Wookiee's back.
That's what I was wondering. I wanted to see it.
Iberian color. Some of them are quite strikingly beautiful.
Man, we got to ban him. We have to ban him from the studios. He's just too distracting.
I can't hear that sound. And like
this is a big one.
Just staring at him right now in his like creamy white, just cottage cheese legs.
What it's doing is it's just searching, probing the rat hole. Underneath the soil is like a subterranean labyrinth.
He's wearing flip-flops in the office right now.
These by name, certainly not by nature.
So that's what a sloth looks like in person.
You are horrifying to look at, yes.
Now, it's time for Mark and Kitchen on Sports Radio 103.7 WEEI.
Come on, yeah!
Show 103.7 WEEI here in Providence. Mark Dondero, Ben Kitchen. A lot to get to today. Ben, how are you?
Very well, my friend. How are you?
Doing well. Matt Morrell behind the glass.
Just thank God I'm not in Chicago anymore.
You didn't have a good trip?
No, it's terrible.
What
it was the worst experience traveling of my life. No, the city's pretty cool. It's fine. Whatever. It's really not that wonderful. I thought it was going to be cooler. But traveling home was the worst experience I've ever had in my life. O'Hare Airport just is awful, first of all. Okay. I didn't know that going into it.
Yeah, it's a mess.
It's a giant piece of crap. And our flight got delayed 7 hours. 7 hours of just sitting there and stewing at the airport. Mm-hmm. And then it finally gets canceled at 1:30 in the morning. The pilot timed out. I understand. That's perfectly fine. I get it. Sucks because now we have to scramble and try and figure out, like, where the hell are we going to sleep for the night?
Yeah.
We're not going to get out until, you know, 4 in the afternoon the next day. So at that point, I'm tired. I'm not feeling well.
I want to fight someone.
And yes, I do. And I almost did. And the gate attendant was such a douchebag.
Yeah.
After the flight got canceled, he was being incredibly rude to everybody. Like, wouldn't look at anyone's being dismissive and just basically saying it's not my problem. And that's when I got mad. And I started cussing him out.
Like a meet the parents kind of moment here?
Kind of. Okay. And I got really pissed. And I started yelling at him and using some choice words. And that's when he finally decides to look up and call the cops.
Call the cops.
So he called the cops on me. The cop comes.
Terrific.
Thankfully, he wasn't very far away. So he kind of saw the whole thing and realized that guy was being an ass to everyone. And I went up to him and I said, listen, he called the cops on me because I called him this. And he goes, don't worry about it. And he's just like, walk with me. He goes, listen. That guy stinks.
Okay.
Nobody likes him. And I was like, all right, cool. And he's like, we're setting up some cots. No, I'm not sleeping in a cot in the airport. I'm finding someplace. Couldn't find a hotel. Finally found one 15 miles away. So now we've got to get a cab. So we're outside. Bunch of flights have been canceled. All the flights to the East Coast have been canceled at this point. So there's like 70 or 80 people in this cab line. And I'm not feeling good. It's 2 in the morning. I've got the sweats going.
Yeah.
And I can feel it. And in the middle of this line, I just reach for that Hudson News bag in front of all these people and just start puking my face off. And I'm a really loud puker. And everyone's looking at me like, what is wrong with this guy?
Okay.
And I'm just puking my face off. It was the worst experience. And then we finally come back to the airport the next day. We take the flight home. It is the bumpiest flight. People are praying on the flight. my fiance next to me is praying because we're just like dropping in altitude and bouncing up and down. And it's just like, oh dear God, please get us home. Please get us home. Please get us home. So that was my Chicago trip. Absolutely sucked.
That was misery. That's miserable.
Pure misery.
The game that the Celtics played last night against the Cleveland Cavaliers, it wasn't quite as bad as that, but it was bad.
It was almost as bad.
It was bad, and that's my opening take. That game was bad. The question I'll ask myself here, because I'm making the opening take, did I change my perception of this series at all based on that game? And my answer is no. That game did nothing for me to change what I thought. I said after game two, which was Tuesday night, they had the long layoff, I thought that the question I posed to myself at that point was, will the Celtics win this series in less than seven or in seven? Because I initially picked Celtics in seven.
Yeah.
And after game two, I said, no, Celtics in seven. I'm sticking with Celtics in seven. They haven't been as good on the road. This is still LeBron James you're dealing with. I did not think Cleveland would just... I thought that if the Celtics could get out to a lead or withstand an early barrage, that then maybe Cleveland would kind of roll over. I figured Cleveland would come out guns blazing, but what happened was they kept it up all game long, and they played a full 48 minutes, and they took it to the Celtics. So rolling over was never an option. The Celtics could never get them into a position, into a vulnerable position. And that was that. They played terribly across the board.
Zero
Jason Tatum,
effort.
He was the only one that was somewhat of a bright spot. Defensively, I mean, look, you can deal with this shot. The shots aren't falling. Defensively, though, was awful. And I thought, look, I'm not one to blame officiating. I thought early in that game, though, they had every call go against them. They had every call. What was really strange, not so much the fouls, and there were some questionable foul calls, I thought. But every loose ball, four guys go up and it goes out of bounds. Everyone went to Cleveland. Look, that's not why they lost.
No, it's definitely not why they lost.
It was a terrible game, but it doesn't change my way of thinking in terms of big picture in this series. I still think the Celtics are the better team. I still think the Cavs' defense ultimately is what it is, and that will kind of... the cream will rise to the top. The Celtics still have home court advantage. I don't think people put enough stock in that before the series. That's a big effing deal. You have home court advantage, and people just kind of brush that aside.
Well, I think it's a big deal, especially with a somewhat immature team.
Young, immature team, and a team that relies a lot on, because you don't have the best player in the series, on the depth, on the waves, on... having some of your bench guys or your second and third tier guys outperform the other team's second or third tier guys. Home court is a big advantage. I know Cleveland's MO is, we just turn it on. We flip the switch. I don't know. I think the Celtics are still in a position to do what I thought they'd do. It'd be a long series, and the home court would be the difference. It's amazing, though, how fast things change.
Mm-hmm.
One blowout. LeBron plays great, and now here we are. Okay, now, because what happened to all that talk about LeBron? He doesn't really want to lose in the finals. He'd rather lose in the Eastern Conference finals.
That's
now
so
he wants
stupid.
To get to the finals. So, and I'm not saying he didn't want to get to the finals ever.
No, I know, but just that thought process is just ridiculous.
The bottom line is the Celtics and the Cavs, nothing has changed after last night's loss. Because if the Celtics go out and win, if the Celtics, did you expect them to sweep Cleveland? I certainly did not.
No, I had Cleveland winning the series.
So, but even after game two, did you expect them to just go ahead?
Absolutely not. No, so, I kind of expected a game like this was going to happen in Cleveland. You had that long layoff. You have a Celtics team that, more so than any team I've seen in a long time, feeds off the home crowd. And then you have this game in Cleveland, that's a pretty good crowd, especially following that team. They're good. I expected them to lose a game or two in Cleveland without, and I did not expect them to sweep. And I still, listen, before the season series started, I thought Cleveland was going to win.
Mm-hmm.
I can totally walk that back. I think the Celtics are going to win. They are the better team, and they have home court advantage, and they play incredibly well at home. In this playoff run, they've played poorly on the road.
1-5.
Throughout the season, they were a very good road team. But right now, you've seen it throughout the playoffs. They really feed off of that home crowd, pushing them along and pushing them forward, especially a guy like Terry Rozier.
Yes, I will give them credit. In the Philadelphia series, they won the key game on the road.
Yeah.
That was a key game. They won that series, what, in five? They won that game three. That was the key game that ended the series, essentially. They came back. They stole it. That was a big win. Look, I always go back to that 08 team and the struggle, because that's the most elite Celtics team that we've ever seen. I know where, I mean, I get the 80s.
Yeah, everyone will say 86. You
know, well, I know, but I'm just saying, like, in recent years, today's Celtics, this generation Celtics, whatever you want to call it, more so than any of the Paul Pierce, Antoine Walker team.
Oh, without a doubt.
So I'm just saying that team struggled against the Hawks. They lost all three games in Atlanta in that first round. Then they lost, I think, a couple games. I don't think they won a road game, actually, until Detroit in the Eastern Conference Finals. They hadn't won a road game. So that's kind of the blueprint. So I don't get all that worried about being bad on the road. But yeah, they would have to win a road game eventually. I would think, because I don't think they would get home court advantage in the NBA Finals if it was the Warriors, the 2-2 seeds. But anyway, this is a team that doesn't need to win a road game, although it does tell me something going back to football or the Patriots. When you can win on the road, that's a very good sign. It would feel good if they could steal a game on the road against Cleveland. I prefer not to rely on solely the home games, because you know what LeBron... I know he went off in game two and they still won that game, but you never want to play with that fire. I never want to get into a game seven when you don't have the best player. I just don't like those situations. Now, they got by it, I think, against Milwaukee. It's not a sure thing, but that's a roll of the dice.
You know, if Kyrie was there, and yes, LeBron's still a better player than Kyrie, you'd feel a hell of a lot better because he's a killer. He's a late game killer. He's a guy that you rely on to score at the end of games. In a game seven, we've seen what he can do. Or in a knockout game, we've seen what he can do when it's all on the line. With him, you feel a hell of a lot better about it. Without him, you kind of shake your head and wonder what this team actually is. This team is not what you saw last night. This team is far closer to the team you saw in the first two games of this series. They are a much better team. They're a much better coach team. I love hearing about how good of a coach Ty Lue is. He's done nothing. He's done nothing in his career. They're talking about, they're putting Brad Stevens, Greg Popovich, Doc Rivers, and Ty Lue in a category altogether, which makes no sense to me. Absolutely no sense. Ty Lue is one of the best guys coming out of a timeout. They do the same exact thing every single play.
No offense to Doc Rivers either, but it's a talent league. How were his Celtics before Garnett and Allen got there? I mean, they set loss
they
record.
They stunk.
They were terrible in 05, or what was it? 06, 07.
Yeah, they were awful.
That team was terrible.
They had that like 20-game losing streak in January.
So this is about LeBron. This is about talent. This isn't about Ty Lue. The Cavs aren't about Ty Lue.
No, not at all.
It's just, you'd prefer they didn't get blown out last night. I would have preferred that. But that was going to happen. This is still the Cavs. It's still LeBron James. He still has championship DNA somewhere running through him. There's pride. There's the feeling and desperation, because there's the feeling that this could be it. And not just from the fans, but from the team, from his teammates. There's all kinds of things swirling around that organization right now that this really could be it for them. So you felt like they were going to, at one point, especially at home, give a good effort. They did last night. You lose the game. You look pathetic. Terry Rozier, do we have that sound, Matt? Terry Rozier talking after the game. I mean, he was talking about how that's something that they needed.
You say you needed one like this. What do you mean?
We needed to get our butts whipped, Come back to reality and take care of business on Monday.
How confident are you to take care of business Monday, and what do you need to be better as a team?
I'm very confident. We got to come out, like I said, we got to play aggressive from the rip. There's no way Al Horford, our course, don't get a shot in the first quarter. So we just all over the place playing too fast. Get it together.
How much you feel like you?
Yeah, I mean, That was a big part of the game last night. Al Horford was not what we have seen out of Al Horford. But this is, do I agree with his comments? I guess. I mean, they needed to get crushed. Look, they probably
Well, that were. Shows that you're immature. If you need to get your ass kicked to kind of get you refocused again, you're a little immature.
And that's
what that is.
Yeah. We'll see. Maybe he was, I mean, maybe that comment applied to Terry Rozier himself more than other guys. They have the young core. I don't know. But I look, game four, and I think Jeff Van Gundy, somebody said this before game three. Game four was the big one. Because a lot of people expected the Cavs to bounce back and win game three. Game four is now, okay, the Celtics took the punch. The Celtics looked at the adjustments or whatever the Cavs made, and now they make, now Brad Stevens goes to work. Now it's a, I mean, game four is always the biggest game in the series. It always is. 2-2 or 3-1, that's a huge, I mean, that's arguably the series. So it doesn't change things for me. This is how it was going to go. It was going to be a long series. It was going to be a fight. It was going to be a dogfight. And I still think the Celtics win the series. It does not change just because they got throttled in game three.
Well, look what happened in the first two games, and then look what happened in the third game. What do we say you needed to do? Don't worry about LeBron. Let LeBron score. Let LeBron do what he's going to do. Once he gets his teammates involved, that's when the team is very dangerous. He wasn't getting his teammates very well involved in the first two games. They were involved right away from the beginning of the tip. Right away in game three. They were involved. They were making things happen. George Hill was involved right away, hitting a couple of big shots to start to create a difference between the two teams. Go back to what you need to do. Make sure you close out everyone else, and don't worry. Just let LeBron do what LeBron needs to do and just score and put up those points. What did he do in game one? 42 points? And they got their butts kicked.
Yeah.
Because no one else could get going, because it's just let LeBron do what his thing. You know, if you look at the stat line, this was LeBron's worst game of the series so far.
27 points?
27 points and 12 assists. He still had a great game. But you allow him to just constantly score on you and not let anyone else get hot or warm up or anything like that, you're going to be fine against this team. Do exactly what you did in the first two games. The problem was there was just zero effort.
Yeah.
They got their butts kicked from the beginning of the game to straight through the end.
It was almost like they expected Cleveland to just roll over. Now, here's another thing. Cleveland, they shot. I mean, look, a lot of this is just basketball. I thought a lot of this game was basketball. The shots weren't falling for the Celtics. Cleveland felt good about being home, and they were falling. I mean, Cleveland shot 50% from three. That's not going to happen every game the rest of the series. 17-34. It's basketball. I mean, you go to a gym that you're comfortable in. You feel better about the shots. You've seen a lot more balls go through those rims than the ones at TD Garden. You're going to make more shots. The home court advantage was huge, as I thought it would be in this series. So, the Celtics have to come out. They have to recalibrate, or whatever you want to call it, figure out the game plan, figure out who they're going to feature, take it to the rim more, or just shoot the ball better. I mean, they will. They were just ice cold to start the game. Ice cold. They could not make a shot. Marcus Morris was brutal early on in this game. Couldn't make anything. Marcus Morris to me is a lot like Jay Crowder. I think he's better than Crowder, but he's kind of the guy. I mean, he can defend a little bit better. But he's sort of the guy. He's sort of a front runner in terms of scoring, where, you know, when it's all going great, he'll jack up and hit those threes, and it's just a party. But when you need him to make a three, He never does it.
Well, he's irrationally confident.
And I don't mean he never does it. Like, he's made some big time.
Oh, he's hit some game winners.
Game
this
winners.
Year.
I'm talking about when the team is in an offensive, they're struggling.
Yeah.
And you need somebody to get. Where can I turn? I usually don't turn to Marcus Morris. At least last night you couldn't. And I wish that, you know, he makes threes. He can make threes. Sometimes you need to make them when nobody else is making them. And he was frustrating.
He can be very frustrating. He's irrationally confident.
He's irrationally confident.
He thinks he can score with anybody.
Yeah.
And there's times when he just gets caught in that rabbit hole of just keep chucking to try and dig himself out of that hole.
Let me just say, though, that I think does help him in some of those late game clutch situations, because he always thinks he's going to make it.
Yeah.
But then the problem is, like last night, he exacerbates the situation. I mean, he just helps worsen things because he's trying to do too much because he thinks he can be a superhero offensively. And then he just makes it worse. He takes, when you, at the moment you can absolutely not afford a horrible shot, he'll take one.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's usually the problem with Marcus Smart, too. Although Marcus Smart will just pull up and all of a sudden chuck a three for no reason whatsoever to try and maybe swing things. I don't really know. There's some bad decision makers offensively on that team sometimes. Morris and Smart are definitely the two biggest offenders of just making piss poor decisions offensively. But Al Horford, you know, they talk about not getting him a shot. He has to be more forceful. He has to come up and get the ball. He's got to do a hell of a lot more. You can't – if he's the best player on the court for them.
Yes, and
he can't just sit back and wait for it to come to him. He has got to go get it. And you can't go through an entire quarter with one of your best players not even taking a shot. You can't go through an entire game with him only taking four shots.
Here's the thing. The Celtics are probably going to lose. I mean, if Cleveland's going to shoot 50% from three, they're probably losing that game.
Yeah.
Defensively, they've got to be better.
You can beat any team if you shoot 50% from three.
A good three-point percentage in the NBA is like 42%.
That's a great
three-point percentage. So 50% is off the charts. But I'm not worried. I think
50% when you're taking 34 of them.
What's the term that they use? Scheduled loss. I would say this was somewhat of a scheduled loss for the Celtics. Game four, I will be more, I guess, open to reevaluating certain things depending on how game four goes. But even then, I probably won't. I mean, the home court advantage was a big deal for me. Cleveland has to find a way to win at TD Garden. And I liked what you said. I think the real Celtics are the team that we saw in games one and two. That is closer to the real Celtics than what we saw last night.
I mean, look at it. That's what they've done most of the year.
Yeah.
I mean, their track record tells you that is far closer to what this team is than what you saw last night.
Yeah.
What you saw last night is an aberration for them. This is a team that's built on hustle and aggressiveness. And they got out-hustled and they got out-aggressived last night.
Yeah.
Completely. By a team that doesn't usually show a ton of aggression.
Yeah.
Cleveland doesn't usually do that. LeBron is always kind of going, always going. But J.R. Smith can go by for four games without doing anything. Kyle Korver can go by 12 games without doing a damn thing. Tristan Thompson, at least in the last couple of years since he got paid, can loaf by for a couple of weeks without doing anything. Kevin Love is not the most aggressive guy in the world to begin with. The Boston Celtics are built on hustling and working, outworking the competition. And they did none of that last night. None of it. Normally, Marcus Smart is the guy you see up and down the court trying to bring everyone together. He was even walking up and down the court with his head down. He knew. And he's usually the last guy hustling.
Yeah, you can't let George Hill be a plus 24.
No.
I mean, that's just unacceptable. I think there will be something to the fact. I won't go as far as Terry Rozier went, but there's something to the fact that this was an embarrassment for the Celtics. And they're going to want to come out and change the narrative in game four.
I'm glad they got embarrassed by playing the way they played. They got embarrassed by not playing hard. It's not like they were working their asses off and playing good and playing very aggressive and got their asses kicked. They weren't playing well at all.
Yeah.
In no facet were they playing well. So that should be at least a little encouraging. Okay, if you ramp it up, start to hustle and start to play a little more aggressive and a little bit smarter, that's not going to happen to you. It's just not going to happen. Because if they got their butts kicked playing their asses off and playing the way they play, you should be a hell of a lot more worried.
401-737-1287 is the phone number. Text us 37937. This is the Mark and Kitchen Show, 103.7 WEEI.
It's Mark and Kitchen on Sports Radio 103.7 WEEI. Call the show at 401-737-1287.
Brad, with some of the high degree of difficulty passes that LeBron had tonight, I mean, is there anything defensively you guys can do differently to combat against that?
Well, I mean, I just think you got to be – we can't give up dunks. You know, obviously some of the threes that he sprays out for are tremendous. There's only one person that can make passes going to his left like that in the league. But we got to do a better job with all of our help and with all of our coverages.
Oh, Mark. Where are you, Mark? Get your ass back to the mic.
Quick comment here. That was Brad Stevens talking about LeBron James and his ability to pass the ball. I'm going to make one quick comment about LeBron James. Is he the best passer in basketball? I'll say yes.
Sure.
But I want to highlight this because I think I've talked about it before, but this is not brought up enough. LeBron James, and we can get more into LeBron James specifically later, but LeBron James, is he the best passer in basketball? Yes. You want to know why he can't touch Michael Jordan?
Why?
If we're going to talk about this. Because he doesn't have the creativity that Michael Jordan had. Great passer. Magic Johnson, though, How creative was he? How much flash did he have? Behind the back, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Or behind the head, Jason Williams, Steph Curry. Those guys, now, those guys aren't in the conversation for best player of all time. But creativity. If you're talking about LeBron and Jordan, creativity isn't even close. And that is never brought up in the discussion about who's better, LeBron or Jordan. The creativity that Jordan had, go watch his highlights. Go watch the no-look layup, switching hands in midair. Those things last. That is why he is the best of all time, because of the art that he put forth while on the basketball court. LeBron is power. He's explosiveness. He's all those things that make him arguably the best of all time. But the creativity, not even around the rim, nothing close to Jordan. Passing the ball, not close to Magic. He could be as good as Magic. He's close to Jordan, but the creativity, that puts you on a whole other level.
He's a better player than Magic was. I'm sorry.
He's better than Magic.
I know people love to live in the 80s and remember the glory days of the NBA. LeBron James is a better player
than
Magic Johnson. Yep. Magic Johnson was a great player, one of the greatest players of all time, probably in the top 10. LeBron's just better. But the reason, I understand where you're going with that Jordan comparison, to me, it's even more glaring when you look at the fact that, look at the first two games of the series. LeBron quits. He flat out quits when the chips get down, and not even when they're down by like 20. He'll get down when they're down by 8.
Yeah.
And he'll loaf on defense.
Well, that's been his big thing.
And Jordan didn't do that.
Mentally.
Jordan was still a killer on defense. LeBron, he just watches too much defensively to even be really compared to Jordan.
Mm-hmm.
Jordan was the best defensive player in the league for a very long stretch of time. LeBron is a good defensive player, but a lot of it is, you know, he's going to trail from behind to try and make that block at the end instead of get up there and take the ball from you while you're dribbling it into the lane, which is what Jordan would do. You go back and look at the end of that series against the Jazz. Everyone talks about that shot he makes over Brian Russell after he pushed him off that ended the series. But look at a couple plays before that. It was that key strip of Karl Malone that led to all of that kind of stuff to win the series.
Yeah.
Jordan never quit. And defensively, he was always working his butt off. LeBron loafs defensively from time to time, far too often. You can understand from time to time, a guy that's putting in that much effort, sometimes it gets by you.
Who has better physical skill, Jordan or LeBron? It's close, isn't it?
It's pretty damn close.
Okay, so it's pretty damn close.
Because I'm also always remembering that, like, that jacked Jordan at the end. You know, that 95, 96, 97 Jordan, that was actually pretty jacked.
Yeah.
That younger Jordan was pretty skinny.
But he could fly.
But he could fly. LeBron's special when it comes to that. I've never seen an athlete like LeBron. 6'8", 250 pounds. It's as fast as he is.
Moves like Iverson.
Yeah. He's a better athlete than Jordan.
But what I'm going to say, it's close, though.
Yeah, it's close. It's absolutely close.
Here's the thing. Jordan played the game like Russell Westbrook in terms of intensity and rage and never giving up and never quitting and just going at your throat at every second of the game. That is a big thing that LeBron, I don't think, really has. He doesn't have that game in and game out, night in and night out, series in and series out, possession in, possession out. He doesn't do that. So that's, and then mentally, like you said, and then there's those finals that you go back to where he kind of disappeared. Did Jordan ever disappear? Did that term didn't even exist until LeBron James started playing in the finals.
Jordan never lost a final.
Disappear.
Right.
You never heard him disappear. He didn't win all the time, but did he ever disappear? I felt like that's the difference. Well, Jordan, you know, it took Jordan 7 years to win. It took LeBron 7 years to win. Jordan couldn't get out. He couldn't get past this guy. Did he ever disappear? And that goes to mental makeup. He never really disappeared that I can think of. I wasn't analyzing basketball games in 1988, but LeBron has disappeared.
Wuss.
Yeah. He's disappeared. He's come up small. He's vanished on the biggest of stages. That's something Jordan never did. So you combine, okay, they're close athletically. You combine that Russell Westbrook rage and tenacity with the fact that he was always, you know, present.
Listen, put it this way. If they're both on the same team and it was coming down to the end of the game and you needed one person to hit a shot, you're giving the ball to Jordan. You know, if you need one person to make a stop, you want Jordan there, not LeBron.
And just the last comment I'm going to make, and it goes into Kyrie Irving, which we're going to talk about, and this call, which we're going to take.
Yep.
Jordan, his forte, I mean, LeBron has won one scoring title. Now, could he have won more? Probably. Jordan's forte was what?
Scoring.
scoring.
While he was winning scoring titles, he was also winning Defensive Player of the Year awards.
Yes,
too.
That's correct. Now, LeBron probably could have won that award. He gets screwed, I think, a couple times. Whatever. Jordan, the scoring was mm-hmm. his forte. And in basketball, scoring is the most important thing.
Yeah.
Especially for a superstar. Like in football. Hey, Vince Wilfork was a freaking great defensive tackle.
Yeah.
He was the best player on the Patriots for a couple of years. But he was a defensive tackle. And guess what? That position and what he does, just not as important as a quarterback and what the quarterback does. So, I mean, he wasn't the best player on the Patriots. He was the best defensive player on the Patriots, is what I meant to say.
We know what you meant.
But it's just not as important as what the quarterback does.
No.
So, I'm just saying LeBron is great, but scoring really isn't his best quality. He's really good, you know, but it's not really his best quality. It's the passing, it's the IQ, it's the physical dominance. Now, that leads to scoring, but as far as shot making and just doing what you need to do, Jordan was better, and that's the most important thing. And that's why the Celtics miss Kyrie Irving so much in this series. Let's talk to DJ in Fall River. DJ, good morning.
Good morning, guys.
How's it going?
I've heard like a little bit of chatter about that Irving trade and, you know, where is he now? He's on the bench in a suit. You know what Kyrie Irving did for us? He got us home court in these playoffs, because I don't think we would have beat Milwaukee without home court. I don't think we would have.
I agree. I completely agree. I thought Milwaukee was going to win the series because I didn't realize they were so poorly coached.
Yeah.
I thought they were going to win the series because they just had more talent.
No, that's a good point. And the beginning of the year was a huge part of that. That's how the Celtics were able to get that big lead in the East that carried them to that two seed.
And without that, I don't think they would be where they are. And my MVP, my Celtics MVP for the playoffs is Terry Rozier, because he basically made a seamless transition when Kyrie went down. And without him and his, whatever he's averaging in the playoffs for points and his, ball distribution and his aggressiveness, I don't think the Celtics would be where they are without Terry Rozier's play. You know what you're going to get from Tatum and Brown and Horford. You know that. But you have to replace Kyrie and his 23 or 25 points a game. And Rozier, basically, it's seamless that he came in and basically took over that job. And he's not the player of Kyrie. I'm not putting him in that category.
No one's saying you are.
And but for the playoffs, in my, I think the second most important player on the Celtics right now is Marcus Smart, because he sets the tone for that defense.
Yep,
he sets the tone. Marcus Smart, Marcus Morris, and Baines. Did you see Embiid? He did not want to go low post on Baines. He didn't.
Yeah, Baines has been good. Good energy, production. Hitting a three occasionally?
More than occasionally now.
And Baines knows his role. That's the most important thing about his game. He knows his role. No easy baskets. When you contest every point that a team tries to get in the paint and you're pushing and you're elbowing, they work. If Embiid had 25 points, he worked for it. I remember he thought that Baines had fouled out when he was waving goodbye to him. The foul wasn't on Baines because Embiid wanted him out of the game. But Baines didn't foul out. If you remember that play, called the foul on someone else. Embiid wanted Baines out of that game because of his how physical he is.
Listen, and, I think your point at the beginning of the call,
for the call, DJ,
was right. Kyrie allowed them to get to this point thus far. And one of the great things about having Kyrie here, especially at the beginning of the season, is you allow Jason Tatum, you allow Jaylen Brown, you allow Terry Rozier to develop a little more naturally and be a little more comfortable with what's going on. So they could take those next steps and they can continue to develop, especially in Rozier and Brown's case, they could continue to develop and move in the right direction without too much pressure on them.
Yeah.
It allowed Jason Tatum to kind of jump in right away and start to take the reins of that role. That's what Kyrie allowed them to do. Just a straight Kyrie-led team without a lot of talent is a bad team. We've seen it in Cleveland. It was a bad team before LeBron came back. He allowed them to go out there and just play and figure it out. And thankfully, they were very good right from jump street. Yep. You know, they lost the first two games of the season to Cleveland.
And Milwaukee.
Hayward got hurt, and then back at home to Milwaukee. But having Kyrie there helped kind of work through those two first games, work through the Hayward injury, and get going right away and step on the gas almost right away.
Yeah, I'll say he mentioned Terry Rozier. I agree with the point. Terry Rozier has been a net positive for the Celtics in this playoff run.
Absolutely. 17 points a game. Yeah.
And he was huge, I thought, in that game three in Philadelphia, because he showed up in that game on the road where he had struggled. And that was why I think they won that game, because he was able to put them in position and produce enough where they were in position to win. The difference is, and this is what I was going to get to, and this was kind of what I was alluding to in that Jordan-LeBron thing. Kyrie scores. He's an elite scorer, yeah. And there's nothing more important than that. And that's what Rozier can't do. Look, he's been great. He has scored. He hasn't been a disaster in terms of turning the ball over for the most part. He provides good energy, a good spark, great handle.
Well, there's things more important than being an elite scorer. I mean, in basketball, you got to be a really solid team, because the solid team is going to beat the elite scorer
every
time. I mean, you look through the history of the NBA, that's kind of how it worked. The Celtics of the 60s didn't have the elite scorer. The elite scorer was Wilt Chamberlain, but who won the majority of the titles? You know, and that's how it kind of keeps going. If you're talking about that and the difference between like LeBron and Jordan, yeah, it makes sense.
Okay, you're talking, that's more of a, I guess, of a macro perspective. I'm talking just micro, where basically basketball, as you know, comes down to making the baskets, you know, make or miss league. So, Rozier, if you need a basket, and again, this is more of a micro view, but if you need a basket, Terry Rozier doesn't really fill me with, he's a good player offensively, but Kyrie Irving, I mean, if I need a basket, I'm totally comfortable giving the ball to Irving.
Yes, okay, and I understand.
So, if you need a basket late, if you need to stop the bleeding, if nobody is hitting shot, I mean, that's where a guy like Irving is so valuable. In so many different, you're struggling, you're in a drought, you're ice cold, the Cavs are on a run. Irving hits that shot.
He's a guy who can take over.
He's the best player offensively.
And that's what they don't have right now. They don't have one singular guy who can take over
offensively.
And spark the offense by hitting a couple of big shots in a row. They don't have that one guy right now.
How many times in basketball have you heard, I mean, they talk about it with the color analysts all the time, that was good defense, it was just better offense.
Yeah.
I mean, that's basketball. Better offense, it doesn't matter what kind of defense you play. Better offense can win the day. So Irving is the best or the most capable of producing that better offense. That's why not having him is so devastating. Now, maybe Jason Tatum turns into that eventually. I think he's got a little bit of that. The Paul Pierce, the comparisons. That's what Pierce was great at in his prime. But not having Irving hurts. It's like a quarterback, because that's the most important thing. You could have a deficient secondary or pass rusher, but the quarterback is what's great about the quarterback is the person that's most efficient covering up, Aaron Rodgers, covering up the other deficiencies.
Yeah.
In basketball, the score is that. I mean, LeBron James, what would that Cavs be? Where would they be without him? I mean, they'd be in the lottery probably.
Yeah, I mean, if they didn't have LeBron...
No, they'd probably be in the playoffs if they had Love.
No.
You don't think with Love and Thompson they could be in the playoffs?
Nope.
Lottery.
I don't think they'd even sniff the playoffs without LeBron. I think that team is that bad. Kevin Love would be... His stats would look a hell of a lot better.
In Minnesota, Kevin Love.
Yeah. I think he'd look like the player you thought he was going to be when he was with Minnesota. After that, they're dreadful.
Yeah.
There's not a single guy you can rely on that team. They're too streaky. J.R. Smith is way too streaky. Plus, he's a douche. Kyle Korver is way too streaky. When he's on, he's lights out. But
and he's really just a shooter.
Yeah, and a month can go by without him having an impact on a game. Like that's not, you can't win with those guys as your focal point, as the guys you're relying on.
Yeah.
That team desperately needs LeBron more than anything else. I've never seen a team other than that first LeBron Cleveland team that went to the finals in 07 that's solely relying on one superstar.
But you have a stretch like they had yesterday. Kyrie Irving is so good offensively, even if he doesn't have it, he has it. What was the quote Manny Ramirez had a long time ago? You know you're a bad man when you're not feeling good at the plate and you're still getting hits. I mean, yeah. That's Kyrie Irving scoring the ball. He could be feeling lousy. His shot's not there, but he can still score. I mean, that's what Manny Ramirez used to do. He'd still get hits even if he wasn't feeling great. And then when he was feeling great, I mean, it was all world, but this is different. I mean, and that's where you miss him last night. You go through a stretch where these other offensive players who are good, but not Kyrie Irving, they can allow that drought to continue and the Cavs build up a lead that's insurmountable. Kyrie's in there. He can break through. He's the one that would end that drought. He's the one that would keep them in the game from just scoring the, his skill and ability to score the ball. And that's what they missed last night. And I'm sure they'll miss him again. But like I said in the first segment, I don't think nothing has changed for me. This was a quote-unquote scheduled loss, and I think they're going to go forward. They're going to be the Celtics. That was not the Celtics last night. That was the team in green. They're going to be the Celtics going into game four, and I expect a close game and maybe a win. We'll see what happens. All right, when we get back, more talk about LeBron James. Patriots OTAs open up this week. We're going to get into that. Ben is hot on the royal wedding. All kinds of things coming up. This is the Mark and Kitchen Show, 103.7 WEEI.
Now, back to Mark and Kitchen on Sports Radio 103.7 WEEI.
All right, 401-737-1287. I know I derailed your opening thought. Did you want to just make a quick comment on quarterback?
Oh, yes. Finally a reason to watch the CFL. Johnny Manziel going to the CFL. Yeah. I think this is a great move. To me, this shows that he cares more about football. Actually, it's really money. But it shows me he cares more about football than Tim Tebow ever did. Tebow, I always thought, just wanted to be famous. He just wanted to be a celebrity, which is why all of a sudden, you know, he leaves the game because he really doesn't want to transition away from being a quarterback, even though he had the ability to play something else. And then all of a sudden he's popping up doing, you know, coverage for college football, and now he's in the minor league system for the Mets. It's about being famous for Tebow.
Well, couldn't you argue that it's I mean, being a minor, you'd rather be a minor league baseball player than play in the
CFL? When Tim Tebow does it, it's a big deal.
Yeah.
To me, he didn't care as much about football as he was leading on. It was
maybe
about
being
famous.
Maybe he just didn't want to live in Canada.
Why wouldn't you want to live in Canada? What's wrong with Canada other than it's ridiculously cold in the winter?
Well, I mean,
and they play during like the spring, right?
I'm not sure when the season is.
Spring and summer, and I think the Grey Cup's right around Thanksgiving. Okay. Our Thanksgiving.
American Thanksgiving.
I haven't watched a CFL game since 1997. And the only reason I did it then is because of where I grew up. I was a fan of Doug Flutie.
Yeah.
And so a Grey Cup game comes on, and Flutie's team's in it. Oh, cool. All right. I think he was on the Argonauts. I don't remember. But that was the last time I watched a CFL game. I'm going to watch a CFL game just to watch Johnny Manziel.
Sure.
I watched those stupid spring game highlights just to see what Manziel was doing because I'm interested in him. I don't think he's a starting quarterback in the NFL. I don't think he ever will be. But I'm interested in seeing him play football in the CFL.
I'll say this. I was high on him when they took him. I covered him a little bit.
He was high too.
Yep. When I was in Mississippi working, he was at Texas A&M. I saw him play at Mississippi State. He was great. He dominated them that day. He was great. Huge head.
Manziel?
Yeah, big.
Really?
Huge head. I couldn't believe how big his head was.
Classic case of an ugly dude getting action simply because he's famous.
Oh, yeah.
Classic case.
Not a sexy looking man.
No.
What I will say, though, first of all, look, I give him credit kind of echoing what you said. A lot of people, a lot of quarterbacks, Tebow, I guess, is the golden example, have had this opportunity and were unwilling to do it. Manziel is going to do it. He's going to go there, try to make it, and try to, I guess, get back into the NFL. We'll see if it works. I give him credit, though, for making the move. That shows that he is committed to football, make money, like you said, but committed to football. He's got to go to Canada, and he's going to play football. Tebow didn't want to do it, and I'm sure there's others that have could have had an opportunity to do that and just didn't want to. They didn't want to go to Canada. They didn't care enough to do that. Or to just, maybe it was an ego thing. They didn't want to, you know, have to face the music of not making it in the NFL. So they did something else.
Which I don't understand. I mean, if you really love football, it makes perfect sense. Go up there, kind of get a little bit better. We've seen guys do this all the time. Not all the time, but we've have enough anecdotal evidence to point that this could work for people. Flutie, it worked for. Went to USFL, NFL, CFL, back to the NFL. And ended up making decent money doing it.
And he was a good quarterback.
And he was a pretty damn good quarterback.
Should have started that game. Rob Johnson should never have started that game.
No. Disaster. Absolutely not. Warren Moon, a guy that they didn't think was going to play quarterback in the NFL. They wanted him to return punts, goes to the CFL, lights it up, comes back, has a Hall of Fame career.
Yeah.
You know, if you really care and you really want to play the game, this is a perfect move. It makes perfect sense. It's better than going to the, you know, Arena Football League.
One thing I will say, though, we talked about Tim Tebow and his unwillingness to do this.
Yeah.
Tebow had options to be, an H-back, a tight end, something other than quarterback in the NFL. Like, teams would have given him a look.
Yeah.
Manziel doesn't have that option. He's a quarterback.
No, I know, which is why I feel even more strongly the way I do that Tebow didn't really care as much about football as he did about being famous because he had other options to stay on teams.
That's true.
And to figure it out.
I guess that would go into that argument.
And
they
were trying to do this with him at a young enough age where he could still get a couple of years out of his career as a tight end or something. Yeah. He just didn't care. I really think it was about being famous for Tim Tebow more than anything else. And I think this move for Johnny Manziel is a lot about money.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the best way for him to make money is to play football, but it shows me he cares about football. So listen, some network, you know, the SEC network would have signed Johnny Manziel up.
Sure.
Absolutely, because he would have brought some eyeballs.
For crying out loud, some of those schools have their own networks that you could pay money, good money, to talk. You know?
Absolutely.
Longhorn Network, Aggie Network, whatever.
Someone would have paid him a good amount of money just to show up on TV.
Yeah.
You know, but he's doing this instead.
He wants to play football.
And he wants to play football. I appreciate it. I love it. And I hope he's successful. He's a jackass. Trust me. He's an idiot. He's a child, whatever.
Frat boy. Yep.
But I'd like to see him kind of rebound from that. I'd like to see him grow up a little bit because he does have talent.
Yeah.
He's an exciting
athlete
to watch.
We talked about creativity with Jay. I mean, he had it in football, I guess, as much as you could have. It's a different kind of sport, obviously. But he was fun. He was fun to watch. I thought he was a winner in college. Like I said, I was high when I thought that move put the Browns in the playoffs. He was their second first-round pick that year. He just got derailed by the life. I guess you could have seen it coming. It's too bad.
You could absolutely see it coming, the way he was behaving in college. You knew it was coming.
But I'm with you. I salute the move. We will hope, you know, we'll see if he does anything successful or productive up there. He's got to beat out Jeremiah Masoli, I think, for the starting quarterback job on the team he signed with. Masoli played
Hamilton,
for
Hamilton Tiger Cats.
Who did he play for, Masoli? Was he an Oregon quarterback?
Sounds right.
For Oregon. Anyway, we'll see what happens. I hope he starts. I don't really care. I mean, if he's going to the CFL,
you're going to watch a game.
You got
to
see him start.
You know you're going to watch at least one game. ESPN's going to pop up some game.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I would watch.
Against one of the two teams called the Rough Riders in that league.
Okay.
They're going to show up.
I know you're on StubHub trying to get tickets to the royal wedding. Thoughts?
Why do people care? I don't understand.
Did you watch?
I did not watch.
Okay.
But Liz woke up early to watch, so when I came downstairs, it happened to be on, and I turned around and went right back upstairs.
Okay.
To me, it makes absolutely no sense why anyone cares about this whatsoever. I can understand why little girls would care, because they dream of having that, you know, fairy tale wedding or whatever.
Yeah.
But these are two people that are, especially in this country, are completely inconsequential.
My daughter wanted to see what the bride looked like.
Yeah, because she's five.
Four, yeah. So I turned it on. I tried to figure out why people care. I mean, look, there were viewing parties for this in Boston. Now, people dressed up to go to this viewing party, okay? My initial thought were, these are a bunch of losers, these people.
They are.
But how is this any different than when a guy dresses up in a jersey and goes to a bar to watch a game?
You're watching,
sports are
you're
different
watching
than
a competition.
Okay.
You know, you have rooting interests. What are the rooting interests here?
Watching something American.
Well, Meghan Markle's American.
Not anymore.
She's a good-looking American, too. But who cares? It's a prince of a country, and a prince doesn't even matter.
Well, he's not even in line.
Sixth in line.
Sixth in line. That's never going to happen.
Who cares?
Hasn't been a king of England since 1952.
No. No, because she's been there forever.
She's been there forever.
She just won't die.
Yeah.
Now,
92.
I don't understand why people care. Like, literally, after it all ended, whatever, I want to watch the news because I kind of want to see what's going on in that Santa Fe situation.
Yeah.
We had a real issue going on in this country, and it's a continuing issue, and I can't find news about it on TV because everyone's covering the stupid
wedding. They're all
there.
They're there. And I got David Muir telling, he's brought to tears almost because they're riding by in some friggin'.
You brought up a
carriage with white horses. Like, who cares?
You brought up the guy wearing a jersey and going to the bar.
Yeah.
Well, what were those guys doing at that wedding? They were trying to get the hell out of there so they could go watch the FA Cup final between Chelsea and Manchester United. They were leaving early. David Beckham was leaving early. Prince William was leaving early. They were all leaving early so they could go to the stupid soccer game.
Okay.
But I'm in this country, I'm watching the news, and I want to see some kind of update what's going on in Santa Fe or what the issue is going on in Georgia or in Illinois, and all I can see is royal wedding crap of two people no one actually cares about. I don't get it. Why is it a big deal? Well, I can understand why Prince Charles and Diana was a big deal back then. I can understand it because you think he might be the future king. This guy can't be the future king.
Well, his likability, apparently, is higher than the queen in England, Prince Harry, Carson Wentz. I mean, he's more likable.
They're
than
useless
the queen.
People. Like, they serve no purpose.
Well, they're royalty. I don't friggin' know.
So what? They don't serve a purpose.
I don't know. Like, what's the role? This isn't 1649. You know what I mean?
I know. You'd think they'd be used to it by now. They've been having this monarchy since Alfred the Great.
I mean, I guess that's what it is. It's the fantasy wedding. I mean, why were all those people out there cheering then?
I don't know.
What are they cheering for?
I don't know.
That he's going to get laid tonight?
Well, you knew he was going to get laid tonight.
What are we cheering for, though? Look,
I don't get it. Maybe, that's my thing. Look, is I don't understand any of this.
Maybe it's because they do a lot of good work, charity work.
Sure,
they have initiatives in Africa, and okay. they're cheering for that.
So we're gonna cheer for the Clintons every time they pop up.
She's a princess.
They do charity work in Africa. They're also criminals. But
yeah,
I mean, it boggles my mind. I don't understand why anyone would care. Anybody other than a 4-year-old girl. Wants to see a pretty woman in a pretty dress and feel like, oh, that's the thing I want when I'm older.
Yeah, they want to see the dresses. They want to see, I mean, it's a wedding, so it's romance. People like watching that. It's a reality. It's like the reality, the Super Bowl of reality
TV. It's not reality. It's the 0.001% of the 1%'s reality. It's not anyone's real reality. It makes no sense to me. I hate it. I think it's the stupidest thing, and I can't believe anyone over the age of 10 gets worked up to want to watch this thing.
I mean, the coverage was just amazing. The coverage was, I don't know if I'll use the word inappropriate, but over the top, at least. I mean, it was just beyond belief, the coverage.
Yeah, it was terrible.
Sending all the networks there, incredible. I mean, look, you want to send the E! News? I get it. But you got people breaking down. You got I don't understand.
My problem is not with the TV stations wanting to cover it because they know it's going to be
people
a major
event. Yeah.
It's the fact that there's morons out there that give a damn about something like this and that there's enough of them that the TV coverage goes, yeah, we got to cover it. Why? Because people are going to watch this crap. Yeah. I don't get it.
Well, but this goes into other conversations we've had. I mean, look at the shows that are popular. Reality shows, reality TV.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
Well, at least with reality shows, you can kind of watch them and
they're
feel
freak shows. It's
they're
freaks.
Freak shows, and yeah. You can feel better about yourself.
Yeah.
You watch a royal wedding, you don't feel better about yourself. You feel a hell of a lot worse.
Yeah.
You look at it and go, damn, the opulence alone makes you go, oh, crap, I got nothing going on in my life. I got no money. What the hell's going on?
Yeah, we rode away from our wedding in a Chevy or whatever. You know, like.
There's nothing reality about it. And I know what you're saying. Yes, we like that weird freak show, but there's nothing freakish about this. It's just incredibly rich people throwing a big party.
It's a princess. She's a princess, so it's sort of like a fairy tale, real life fairy tale. People probably find that interesting. I have no idea. I mean,
they do find it interesting. I just don't get why.
You know when I first heard of Meghan Markle? Didn't she have a thing with Rory McIlroy?
Like, I have no idea.
I saw her in pictures with Rory McIlroy, and I was like, who is this with this golfer that I'm a fan of? So that's when I didn't know about suits or what. I never heard of her.
I had never heard her name. I had just seen her in the commercials for that show, Suits. That's okay. It. Because I watch TNT on NBA on TNT on a Tuesday night, and they show an ad for Suits. Or USA, whatever. Now.
Matt's all quiet back there. He's all about the royal wedding.
My wife's had the same conversation, only the opposite version of me in Star Wars.
What's the infatuation with Star Wars?
Exactly. Why do you care? Why is this? Why is that?
But Star Wars is created to entertain, though.
Yeah, it's a story.
It's a story. You're into
She just doesn't figure out why. She can't figure out why I care so much.
Okay.
I think you two should get a divorce.
But the real answer is I'm a nerd.
Okay.
I think it's time that this relationship is over, Matt.
You like Star Wars, huh?
I love Star Wars.
Star Wars is pretty good. It's not like my favorite.
Yeah, I could care less.
I used to love it when I was a kid. Now I look at it and I'm like, it's all right.
Okay. Okay, so that's the royal wedding segment. I don't really understand.
Your mind's blown.
I mean, I only was even watching because I knew everybody else was. And I just wanted to try to figure out what the draw was, and I never could figure it out.
The only thing I saw of it when I walked downstairs was them getting in, I believe it was a Jaguar, maybe it was an Aston Martin, I think it was a Jaguar, and I was like, why is he on the wrong side? Why is he getting into the wrong side for England? Why is it a left-handed car, or a, you know, left-side driver seat in the car? I didn't understand that. That was it. I was like, okay, walking back upstairs.
Okay, so that answers the question as to why people cared about the royal wedding.
No, it doesn't. I still don't know the answer.
Well, we try to answer it. We're not going to know the answer. The question we're going to pose when we get back here at the start of hour two, why is LeBron James so hated? That's next here on the Mark and Kitchen Show, 103.7 WEEI.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.